We want to know how TCP controls congestion. But before we look at TCP, we'll look at the general approaches. So in our internet, if we have many sources sending, then if we have the internet or a network, an IP network, which has a particular capacity, that capacity is determined by the capabilities of the links, the capabilities of the routers connecting those links. And the router's capabilities are mainly about the speed at which they can forward packets and the amount of buffer or memory they have available to store packets. It's hard to, you cannot just give a number to the capacity of a network, the same that I can say the capacity of my Ethernet cable is 100 megabits per second. But what is the capacity of a network? Well, that's much harder to give a number to. But if our sources start to send data into the network that approaches the capacity, then the performance, the throughput, can start to decrease and the delay increases. That's a problem. Therefore, what we want to do is to control the rate at which the sender sends such that they don't send at a level that approaches the capacity, and therefore we don't have that drop in performance. There are two general ways to control congestion or to avoid congestion. And we say they're either done at the transport layer or the network layer, or end-to-end or network-assisted. End-to-end is what we're going to look at with TCP. That is, again, end-to-end is referring to the end host, the computers. The routers in the network are not active in controlling congestion. In end-to-end congestion control, it's the source and destination computer which are active and controlling congestion. So we'll spend a lot of time looking at that, but there's an alternative where the network entities, such as the routers, have more active role in controlling congestion, network-assisted. What happens in this case, and we're not going to focus on it any more than just this slide, then we'll go on the other approach, is that the routers in the network, once they start to detect something's gone wrong, we have our router, we have our internet made up of many routers and links. This router has a buffer. There are many connections coming into this router and maybe multiple outputs. That is, data is coming into this particular router from many directions. If we look, if there are other routers in this network and other sources, and the data be coming in from different links and going out into different directions. And as data comes in, it may be stored in the buffer. The packets are stored in the buffer and then eventually sent out onto the correct destination. If this router recognizes that congestion is getting close to occurring, then it can try to control the sources, tell them to slow down. Now, one way it can detect that is if its buffer starts to become full or approaches capacity, and the router, as packets come in, because the buffer is full, starts to drop packets, then that's an indicator to that router that, okay, people are sending too fast such that I have to drop packets. Therefore, congestion is about to occur. Our network is becoming congested. And therefore, the router will try to notify other sources of this event occurring and therefore tell them to slow down. So the routers may provide direct feedback to the source. So I'll actually extend this. This may be other routers. And eventually there's some source host and some destination host. Of course, there are many others. If we look at this path, this router starts to detect, okay, I have to drop some packets. My buffer is full. I'm detecting congestion. Then it can tell this host, slow down. Stop sending so fast because you're causing congestion in our network. Now, it may have to tell multiple hosts of that as well, not just an individual host. So that's the basic concept of network-assisted congestion control, that network devices, routers, detect performance problems and tell the sources to slow down. And then the sources need to reduce their sending rate. Another approach which is similar is that instead of telling the source, let the packets go through. So this source is sending packets to this destination, a stream of packets, TCP segments, for example. They're coming through, modal packets. This router starts to detect congestion because the buffer becomes full, packets start to be dropped. Some packets are coming through. The router could mark the packets, insert some special information inside the packet saying congestion is occurring. And those packets are eventually received by the destination, and now the destination recognizes, okay, from the packets being sent from this source to me, along that path, congestion is occurring somewhere, and therefore the destination would then respond back to the source saying slow down. So this is a combination of involving the network as well as the end hosts. We need some feedback to the source to tell it to slow down, because that's the entity that's causing the congestion. It may come direct from the routers, or it may come via the destination host, but again, originating from the routers. And there are different ways to provide that feedback, but the basic concept is to get some information to the source saying that you are sending too fast. And then the source should slow down. So network-assisted congestion control has the routers involved in detecting and providing feedback to the source. End-to-end congestion control normally doesn't involve the routers. It's just source and destination. Assume the routers do not detect or do not inform anyone about congestion, just have the source and destination try to detect congestion. And that's in fact what TCP does. And it's the main congestion control mechanism used in the internet today. So let's go through that one. Oh, we have a diagram. Network assisted congestion control. Okay, two approaches. So we have a source sending via a set of routers. If this one detects congestion, it can give direct feedback, sending a special message perhaps, or it gives feedback via the destination host by marking the packets by the destination, which informs it that the destination host should tell the source host to slow down. So that's an example of network-assisted congestion control. But now let's look at TCP. TCP, remember, is the main transport protocol used in the internet. We went through this morning several of its features, including flow control. We saw flow control involved the sender sending packets, and when the receiver the receiver knows how much of its receive buffer is full or is utilized, and the receiver using the window, the advertised window, informs the sender how much it's allowed to send. But flow control is about making sure we do not overflow the destination. Congestion control is about making sure we do not overflow the routers in the network. So important difference there. But TCP implements both of them. And the idea is that the sender, so if this is our source who's sending data to our destination in a TCP connection, they've established a connection sending data. The idea is that the sender will limit the rate at which it sends based on what it perceives about network congestion. There's no explicit feedback by routers. The sender sends data and it makes some guess about congestion in the internet, in the network, and controls its sending rate based upon that estimation of how much congestion there is. If it thinks there's no congestion, increase your sending rate. If you think there is congestion, decrease your sending rate. That's the basic idea. Because if we see that there is congestion, the way to avoid any further congestion is to slow down. Do not send so many packets into the network. But if we see that there's no congestion, because we'd like to send as fast as possible, if we see that there's no congestion, let's try and increase our sending rate until we detect that we're getting close to capacity. So there are different issues that arise of how to achieve this general goal. How does a TCP sender limit its sending rate? That's one thing that we'll look at. How does it perceive that there is network congestion? Without explicit feedback from the routers, how does this source know that routers are becoming congestion? That is, that the buffers are becoming full, that packets are starting to be dropped. How does the source know that? Well, we'll look at mechanisms for it to make an estimate of that. And then once it knows that there's congestion, how does it respond? And the way that it responds, the way that it increases and decreases its sending rate is referred to as a TCP congestion control algorithm. There are different algorithms. We'll look at the main concepts. First one is that for congestion control, we need to control the rate at which the sender sends. And there are different things that control the rate at which the sender is allowed to send. Firstly, from the flow control, which we spoke about this morning, it's limited by the advertised window. That is, there's a parameter. If we have our TCP source, let's assume it has a lot of data to send to the destination. It wants to ideally send as fast as possible. We'd like to transfer data as fast as possible to the destination. Let's assume it's got a lot of data to send. The rate at which it is allowed to send is limited by the advertised window that the destination informs. Remember, at the destination there's a buffer. Depending upon the amount of space available in the buffer, when an acknowledgement comes back, so we're sending data, and when an ACK comes back, one of the fields in the TCP segment is the window, or the advertised window field. Which indicates the amount of buffer space available and indicates the maximum number of bytes that the source is allowed to send before it has to wait for another acknowledgement. So, let's say we had an example this morning, but let's do another one. We have 10,000 byte buffer. It's originally empty at the receiver. In the first iteration, we send 5,000 bytes. 5 kilobytes is sent from the source to the destination. Then that is stored in the buffer. Therefore, there will be 5,000 bytes available in the buffer. Total size 10,000. We just received 5,000. There are 5,000 available. We send back an advertised window of 5,000, saying you're allowed to send another 5,000. In the second case, if we send 5 kilobytes, then that 5 kilobytes will fill up the buffer because we have the original 5 kilobytes that we received in the buffer plus the second 5 kilobytes, and the destination would send back an acknowledgement with an advertised window of what value? The advertised window in this case
will be zero. If our buffer is full at the maximum size, 10 kilobytes, just received two lots of 5 kilobytes, all stored in the buffer, we'd send back an advertised window saying zero, which indicates to the source it's not allowed to send any more until it receives another acknowledgement saying you're allowed to send more. So that essentially blocks the source from sending. It will be allowed to receive more when the application removes data from the buffer. So this advertised window is effectively controlling the rate at which the sender sends. When it's small, the sender can only send a small amount of data. When it's large, it can send much more. And if we say that if we send one data segment using the maximum window and we get one acknowledgement back, then we can think of each iteration. We send a data segment, we get an ACK back, and then we, depending upon the advertised window, we send more segments and then get an ACK back. Depending on the window, send more segments, get an ACK back. Then the time it takes to send the segments and get an ACK back is going to impact on the data rate that we are sending at. We have an equation, not quite here, but we will soon. If our round trip time is known. Now, the round trip time is the time it takes to send a segment and get a response back. The round trip time to get there and back. So, if in the first iteration, as another example, let's give a round trip time of 100 milliseconds. So the round trip time is about the delay across the network. Let's just give it a value of 100 milliseconds for an example. The time it takes to get one data segment there and to get it an acknowledgement back. Of course, in real life, it would vary up and down, but for calculations, let's keep it constant. Then, let's say in the first case, we send 1 kilobyte. We send 1 kilobyte. And we get an acknowledgement back. So in the first 100 milliseconds, we've sent 1 kilobyte. And then, if we look at the advertised window, in our example, the advertised window would be 9,000 bytes, because we've got 1 kilobyte in here, a maximum of 10, we've got 9,000 remaining. So we get an advertised window of 9,000 bytes. We can send, in the second case, 9,000 bytes, 9 kilobytes. So in that second iteration of 100 milliseconds, we send 9 kilobytes. Now let's assume that the application reads all of that data from the buffer. We had 1 kilobyte from the first packet, the first segment, and then another 9 kilobytes. So we had 10 kilobytes in the buffer. The application reads that buffer and takes it all out. So as a result, the buffer is empty. We send back an acknowledgement with an advertised window of 10 kilobytes. Buffer is empty means there's 10 kilobytes available, meaning the source can send 10 kilobytes. So in the next iteration, it sends the full 10 kilobytes. We receive the 10 kilobytes, put it in the buffer. Now let's assume that the application reads it immediately. And let's look at the best case scenario. As soon as the data is received, the application reads that data, such that 10 kilobytes are received, put in the buffer, and immediately removed from the buffer. So the ACK that comes back says you're allowed to send another 10 kilobytes. So the next iteration would send another 10 kilobytes. And if that happened again and again and again, that is, we send 10 kilobytes, it's immediately removed by the application. We send back an ACK saying advertise window is the full 10 kilobytes. Then that leads to the best case performance that we can achieve based with this flow control mechanism. Every 100 milliseconds, we can send 10 kilobytes. Or, in general, every round trip time, this is the round trip time here, 100 milliseconds, every round trip time, we can send the advertised window worth of packets or bytes. Or the maximum buffer size worth of packets. So now if we define the sending rate, the rate at which the source is sending, if we look at these two cases and assume this kept happening, send 10 kilobytes, immediately removed from the buffer, send another 10 kilobytes, and so on. If that kept happening, then what are we doing? We're sending 10 kilobytes every 100 milliseconds, which is what? 10 kilobytes in 100 milliseconds is 100 kilobytes per second. Is 100 kilobytes in 1 second. So in these cases, and if it kept going, the average sending rate of our source would be 100 kilobytes per second. Or simply, the advertised window divided by the round trip time. That is, now this is an approximation because the round trip time varies. And there may be instances at the startup phase that make it slightly less than this, but approximately we can say that the sending rate is limited based upon the advertised window and the round trip time. If we increase the advertised window, we can send more. In a particular network, we cannot control the round trip time much. I cannot control the round trip time between my computer and a server in the US because it depends upon many factors. One of them is the distance, the physical distance. One is about the links. We can sometimes control the window size. And we'll see that's what we do with congestion control, change the window size. But just looking at flow control, the maximum sending rate we can achieve is limited by the maximum advertised window divided by the round trip time. We'll see some more results of that shortly. So the same concept will apply by introducing a new window called the congestion window. Advertised window is just for flow control. We want to control the speed at which the source sends. The advertised window controls the speed at which the source sends for flow control. We'll introduce a congestion window which controls the speed at which the source sends for congestion control. And it uses the same concept. It limits the amount of bytes that the source is allowed to send. And the way that TCP sender works is that it's allowed to send no more than the minimum of the two different windows. So there's in fact two different windows, the congestion window and advertised window. If the advertised window was 10 kilobytes and the congestion window was 5 kilobytes, TCP sender is not allowed to send any more than 5 kilobytes, the minimum of the two. when we receive an ACK, more bytes can be sent. That is, we send our 5 kilobytes, we receive an ACK, allowing us to send more bytes. So, the same concept applies, that the sending rate is in fact equivalent to the minimum of the advertised window and the round and the congestion window divided by the round trip time. I'll write that down to be clearer. The sending rate of a TCP sender is approximately equal to the minimum of the advertised window, congestion window, divided by the round trip time. Following the same concepts as what we looked at with the advertised window. Essentially, the window tells us how many bytes we're allowed to send every round trip time, every period of time. And therefore, the rate is that amount of bytes divided by that period of time. When we look at congestion window and the congestion control algorithms of TCP from now on, since we're going to focus on congestion control, what we'll assume is the advertised window is very large, infinite. It's not in practice, but let's assume the advertised window is very large, so we can ignore that. Because if this is very large, and by very large it will be always larger than this, then it becomes this. If the advertised window is very large, or always larger than the congestion window, the sending rate is approximately equal to the congestion window divided by the round trip time. Because the minimum of these two, if this is very large, then the minimum of these two will always be this one. That's just for this explanation of congestion window and how congestion control works. So we can ignore the impact of the advertised window. Or in other words, assume the buffer at the receiver is very large, so that we don't need flow control. And that's where we get to here. The sending rate is approximately equal to the congestion window divided by the round trip time. So with congestion control in TCP, the idea is to control the speed at which the sender sends. And the way that we control the speed is by adjusting the congestion window. If I want to allow my sender to send faster, increase the window. Because increasing this will increase the sending rate. If I want to allow my sender, or if I want to restrict my sender from sending faster, that is, make it send slower and slower, reduce the congestion window. So this is a parameter at the sender that changes over time. We cannot generally control the round trip time. Like we said, that depends upon many factors. So the source computer cannot control the round trip time, only the congestion window. So that's how TCP would limit its sending rate, or change its sending rate, changing this congestion window value. Yeah. Okay, yes, so I haven't mentioned that these two values, we measure them in bytes, or we could say packets if packets are a fixed size. These are two parameters, advertised window, congestion window, or two variables. They measure the amount of bytes we're allowed to send. So the units is bytes, or sometimes we'll refer to it as packets or segments. So if the advertised window was 10 kilobytes and the congestion window was 7 kilobytes, then, and the round trip time, like our example, was 100 milliseconds, then if this was 10, this was 7 kilobytes, 100 milliseconds, then the sending rate would be approximately what? 10 kilobytes of advertised windows, 7 kilobytes of congestion window, 100 millisecond round trip time. What's our sending rate? RTT is 100 milliseconds, like in the example there. Advertised window 10 kilobytes, like in the example. And congestion window 7 kilobytes. What's our sending rate? We'll wait for someone to work it out. Sending rate? Anyone? Tell you. Doesn't give any magic answers. Then why do you need it? If the advertised window was 10 kilobytes, saying for flow control, you're allowed to send 10 kilobytes. And then you'll have to wait for an ACK. That is, you'll have to wait for one round trip time. That's the meaning there. But this other parameter, congestion window, was 7 kilobytes. We'll see how it's set shortly. But if that was 7 kilobytes, the minimum is, of course, 7 kilobytes. With a round trip time of 100 milliseconds, that is, in every second, we can send 10 times that amount. With 100 milliseconds, it's 0.1 second. So 7 kilobytes in 0.1 second is equivalent to 70 kilobytes in 1 second. Our sending rate would be 70 kilobytes per second. So that's how we can calculate the sending rate. And therefore, if I want to increase the sending rate of my TCP source, increase the window size. In particular, assuming the advertised window is always larger than the congestion window, increase the congestion window. Assuming this is infinite. This was 7 kilobytes. This was 100 milliseconds. Gives me 70 kilobytes. If I want to allow my sender to send faster, set the congestion window to 10 kilobytes. I'll get 100 kilobytes per second. But if I want to limit my sender, reduce the window. And that's what we'll see that the TCP congestion control algorithm does. It changes the value of the window up and down depending upon the amount of congestion in the internet. We'll see that shortly. We'll see it all come together. The first question was, so we want to limit the sending rate of the sender. How do we limit? By controlling the congestion window, by changing this variable. How does the sender know that there's congestion? When do we know to increase or decrease it? Let's have a look. How do we perceive network congestion? Because we get no explicit feedback from routers, so we must make some estimate or guess that there's congestion in the internet. And in TCP, the sender assumes a packet loss or a segment loss indicates network congestion. I'm sending packets through the internet. My TCP sender is sending packets. Everything's going fine. I'm sending them. I'm getting ACKs back from the receiver. So here I'm sending all my packets, getting an ACK back, sending more and so on. Everything's fine. And then at some stage I send a packet and I don't get an ACK back. And I eventually time out because I don't get an ACK back within time, and therefore that I assume that that packet has been lost. Somewhere in the internet, it didn't get to the destination. If this event occurs, a packet loss occurs, then the TCP sender assumes that there's congestion in the internet. Because why else would a packet loss occur? One of the main reasons for packet losses in the internet is congestion. The routers become busy because everyone else is sending. The router queue fills up. And then eventually a packet that arrives at that router when the queue is full is dropped. That's congestion. And since if the sender doesn't get an acknowledgement back indicating a packet loss, it assumes that there's been congestion somewhere in the internet. It doesn't care about where the congestion is, which router dropped it. It just assumes that there is congestion in the internet. And this is an indicator to slow down. If you detect congestion, slow down. So, TCP assumes a loss indicates network congestion. When is a loss detected? Well, when a sender times out, we send a packet, we're waiting for an ACK, we've waited long enough, we time out, that's a packet loss. But in fact, we've seen, at least some of us have seen in a course last semester, that there's another way to detect a packet loss in TCP. We send multiple packets, we receive duplicate acknowledgements, indicating that the receiver has received packets, but has missed at least one packet, and therefore keeps sending back an ACK saying, I'm expecting to receive packet number 7. I'm expecting to receive packet number 7. And after receiving 3 duplicate acknowledgements, the source assumes that one of the packets, in our example, packet number 7, was lost. So there are in fact 2 different ways to indicate a packet loss, a timeout event or duplicate acknowledgements being received. We'll see an example of them shortly. Is this a reasonable assumption? That is, assume that a loss indicates network congestion. Well, in most aspects or most parts of the internet, yes, it is reasonable. Because in most cases, the reason why packets are lost is because of, at routers, the buffers become full. And that's because of congestion. Therefore, if we lose a packet, then that indicates congestion. However, there are some networks, especially wireless networks, where we may lose packets due to other reasons. Poor wireless communications channel. Mobility. It doesn't indicate congestion, it indicates poor wireless links, link errors. When I send packets from my laptop via the Ethernet cable onto the network, it's almost 100% reliable. That is, there are very few errors across that link. It's a very good quality link. So it's unlikely that I'll lose a packet across that link. But in wireless links, sending via the wireless LAN, especially if the signal is not very strong, there's a higher chance that some of my packets will be lost. This is not an indicator of congestion. It's an indicator of poor link quality or a link error. So although in most cases packet losses indicate congestion, there are some special cases where it does not. And as such, that in those special cases, sometimes the TCP congestion control algorithm doesn't work very well. And TCP performance may be quite low. If you've got a wireless LAN link and your link quality is very low, as a result you get many packet losses, you may find the download rate or the data transfer speed is very low, the throughput. And that one artifact, or one reason for that, is TCP. All right, but assuming this assumption is okay, then what we do, as the sender detects a packet loss, it will change its value of congestion window. The other way, the other direction, if we have packet losses, we assume congestion. If we receive ACKs, we assume decreased congestion. A packet loss, increased congestion. Receive ACTS successfully, decreased congestion. And the faster the acknowledgements arrive, we assume the less congestion, because they're the jewels of each other, or the opposites. That is, if I send data and don't get an ACK, that's a packet loss. That indicates congestion. If I send data and do get an ACK, that's good, and that indicates that there's no congestion in the internet. So we'll use these events to control our congestion control algorithm. Let's see how that works. So, first, we control the sending rate using the congestion window variable. We detect congestion if there's a packet loss. We detect increased congestion if there's a packet loss, and we detect decreased congestion if we receive ACKs. The idea is to increase the congestion window when we receive ACKs, decrease the congestion window, slow down, when we detect packet loss. And all of that is implemented in some algorithm, a congestion control algorithm. And there are different components to such an algorithm. Let's look at the terminology before we go through those components. We'll introduce a maximum segment size. Think of this as the maximum size that can be sent by TCP. As an example, a maximum segment size, let's say, is 1,000 bytes. That's the maximum amount of data we can have inside the TCP segment. So this is a variable known by the TCP sender. We have a variable called the congestion window, or CWND for short. At the TCP sender, measured in bytes. When we look at the algorithm, we'll assume the maximum segment size is fixed. The congestion window will vary over time, so we won't give it a value here, but it's measured in bytes. And we have the round trip time in seconds. In practice, the round trip time varies, but in most of our examples, we'll assume it's fixed just to do some calculations. And it's the time from sending a segment until the corresponding ACK is received. If I send one TCP segment and then I get the ACK back, the time from when I started that to receiving the ACK is called the round trip time. We're going to assume for this explanation that the TCP receiver sends an ACK for every segment received. I send one data segment, the receiver will immediately send back an ACK. I send another data segment, send one ACK. In practice, that doesn't have to occur. TCP could be a little bit more complex and say, you send two data segments, you send back one ACK, acknowledging both. But for simplicity, let's assume one ACK for every data segment. So, given these concepts, we have different parts of an algorithm to try and increase and decrease the congestion window. And for our example, I think we'll use 100 milliseconds. All right, the units is seconds, but I've got the modifier at milliseconds here. There are three main components to this algorithm, congestion control algorithm, referred to as additive increase, multiplicative decrease, slow start, not slow tart, and reaction to loss events. So let's see them. Additive increase, multiplicative decrease. Two parts. Additive increase is increasing the window, increasing our sending rate. Multiplicative decrease, decreasing the window, decreasing the sending rate. And as the name suggests, this is doing it in an additive or linear manner. Increasing in an additive manner by adding on some component. Multiplicative is doing it in a much faster manner. That is, we'll see it's a exponential reduction in the window size. So additive increase occurs when no congestion is detected. Because if there's no congestion detected in the internet, then TCP will assume that I can send a little bit faster until we get to congestion. So it assumes that there's some available capacity in the network. If there's no congestion, then the capacity is not fully used. So send a little bit faster. So additive increase involves increasing its sending rate, but as a slow increase. The aim is that TCP sender will increase its congestion window by one maximum segment size every round trip time. So using our example values, in the additive increase phase, the objective of the TCP sender is every 100 milliseconds, increase the congestion window by 1,000 bytes. If the congestion window was initially 1,000, then if we're in the additive increase phase, one round trip time later, 100 milliseconds later, we'd like to increase it to 2,000. And then another round trip time later to 3,000, to 4,000 and so on. That's the idea there. We'll see how it's implemented shortly. Sometimes this phase is also called congestion avoidance. Well, what happens if we detect congestion? Packet loss occurs. Then we want to decrease the sending rate of the sender. And the aim is for the sender to halve the congestion window for each packet loss that occurs. We'll see that actually it becomes more complex than what we show here. We'll see there's some variations to that, but for the starting point, let's assume that's all we're going to do. This is the concept of what we're trying to achieve. This is time, size of our congestion window. The idea is that we increase our congestion window until we detect a packet loss. And then we halve the window, essentially decreasing our sending rate. And then we start increasing again, slowly increasing, increasing, increasing. Another packet loss is detected. Halve the window. Increase and so on. So over time, packets are lost. We get this sort of zigzag shape of our congestion window size. And remember, when I plot congestion window here, it's proportional to sending rate. Because if we take a specific value here, this value is 16 kilobytes, 16K at this point. Our round trip time is fixed of 100 milliseconds. Sending rate at this point is what, 160 kilobits per second, kilobytes per second. But then we detect a packet loss. Therefore, according to the congestion control algorithm, we halve the window from 16 down to 8. So this becomes 8 kilobytes which is equivalent to a sending rate of 80 kilobits per second, kilobytes per second. Because it's just 8 kilobytes divided by 100. So this plot is proportional to sending rate. I could plot sending rate here versus time, and it would be exactly the same shape, just different absolute values here. So that's how we'd like our congestion window and or sending rate to change over time. If there's no congestion, slowly increase. If there's congestion detected by packet loss, decrease rapidly. And then slowly increase it up until something goes wrong, and so on. And that continues on. Let's go back. All right, we'll do some more calculations in a moment. Let's make sure everyone's clear on what's happening. Let's have a quiz. How do we detect congestion with TCP? How do we detect congestion? There are several important things that we need to do. How does TCP sender detect congestion? I guess. No guess, someone else. How does the sender detect or assume congestion occurs? You can read your slides, that's okay. No? How does it detect? Okay, all right, I'll be clearer. How does it detect increased congestion? Increased congestion. What you said is partially correct. ACK. How does it detect increased congestion? What event occurs? It's the negative of what you just said. What did you say? You said an ACK. It's in fact no ACK. You detect congestion by not receiving an ACK, which is in fact indicator of a packet loss. Let's draw a diagram of the TCP data transfer just to remind people. Source and destination, we'll just look at data going in one direction. Assume we've set up a connection, we've got data to send, we send a segment. In fact, we're allowed to send multiple segments in some cases. Actually, let's start with two, maybe easier. Let's say our segments are the maximum segment size of 1,000 bytes. So this represents one segment, 1,000 bytes. That's the transmission time, the propagation time. We send it, start sending here, it's received at this time. And when the destination receives it, it sends back an ACK. And similar when it receives the second one, sends back an ACK. Let's give sequence numbers, and let's say this one was sequence number 1, and this one, therefore, would have sequence number, not 2. Look at the maximum segment size. Why? We have our data, the total set of data. When we break it into segments, if this is the first segment, segment 1, then the sequence number of that segment indicates the sequence of the bytes. This is the first byte. This is the 1,000th byte. This would be byte 1,001. This would be byte 2,000. And then 2,001. That is, if we break all of this data into segments of 1,000 bytes, the first segment would have sequence number 1, and it would contain bytes from 1 up to 1,000. The second segment would have sequence number 1,001, and the third segment 2,001, and so on. So sequence number 1, 1,001, send an ACK. ACK number here equals what? 1,001. We receive the first segment containing sequence number 1 and containing 1,000 bytes. The receiver sends back an ACK saying, thank you, I now expect to receive byte 1,001. It eventually does receive that, and as a result would send a little bit later the next ACK. So this is just how the data transfer works over time. I'll just hide the ACKs, just so we can draw the diagram a little bit clearer. If now we consider multiple segments being transmitted, the number of segments we're allowed to transmit depends upon our window sizes, the value of CWND, the congestion window, and in fact also the value of the advertised window. That controls how many segments or how many bytes we're allowed to send. If my congestion window was 3,000 and my advertised window was 10,000, it means I'm allowed to send the minimum of these two, which is 3,000 bytes. And since, to keep things simple, we're saying all segments are 1,000 bytes, that's equivalent to 3 segments. I could send segment 1, 2, and 3. Then I must wait. Wait for some acknowledgement to come back. Let's consider a case where we can send 6 segments. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And we lose the third segment. The source was allowed to send 6 segments in this example. We send them, and then we wait for ACKs to come back. Okay. The destination receives the first segment, and this is not very good scale, but the ACK comes back. The time it takes for the ACK to come back depends upon the round trip time. Whether the ACK comes back here, here, or a long time later actually depends upon the round trip time, which depends upon many factors, propagation, transmission, queuing, and so on. So let's say the first ACK comes back here. ACK number 1001. Second ACK will come back a little bit later. ACK number 2001. This third segment which was sent was lost. Why was it lost? Now let's look in more detail about the network. Here's my source computer, my destination, and in fact, connected via a set of routers. This is our internet. And in fact, these routers have other computers connected to them and other routers connected. Just some examples. But this is the path from our source to our destination. So what was happened? When we sent the first segment, it went to the router, passed it on through the set of routers, and it got delivered to the destination. And then when it sent the second segment, it got delivered to the destination. The third segment, let's say it gets delivered via these two routers, and then it arrives, this is the segment, arrives at this router. But this router, which has some buffer, some amount of memory to store the packets that are arriving before they are sent out, its buffer is full at this time. Because there are many other sources also sending via this router. It has packets not just coming from this source via this preceding router, but from all the other sources, because this is a large network. So there are, in fact, at this point in time, many packets coming into this router. And when this packet arrives, it finds that the packet, that the buffer of the router is full. What can the router do? Well, it must drop some data. And the obvious thing to do is to drop the one that just arrived. Because there's no place to store it in memory before it can be sent. So it drops this packet, discards it. As a result, the packet doesn't get delivered at the destination. As a result, the packet is lost from TCP's perspective. So that's what is a typical cause of packet loss. And why? Well, because the router was congested, or the network in general was congested. Congestion occurred because many sources were sending at the same time, and the intermediate routers were reaching the capacity of what they can deliver. So this is an instance of congestion occurring. A packet is lost from TCP's perspective, and shortly we'll see that TCP will respond using its congestion control algorithm. But let's continue our example here. This packet doesn't reach the destination. There's, of course, going to be no ACK that comes back. The next thing that the destination receives is this packet. It sends back an ACK. What's it say? What's the acknowledgement number? Again? No? Someone else? What's the ACK number? 3001, 4001, try again. Again? 1001, 2001, good. Why? Because TCP expects, or the receiver expects to receive the data, or wants to receive the data in sequence, in order. So what happens? It's received bytes 1 up until 1000. Then it receives the second segment, which in fact bytes 1001 up to 2000. It receives this fourth segment. So if we broke this into six segments, the receiver has received the first segment, okay. The second one, okay, sent back an ACK. Did not receive the third one. It did receive the fourth segment here. But it wants to receive the data in order. So it sends back an ACK saying, I'm still expecting to receive byte 2001. I'm still expecting to receive this segment. So that's how the acknowledgements come back if we lose a packet. Now, there are two things that may happen here, depending on the timing. The sender sent this third segment. It received ACK for segment 1, ACK for segment 2, reaches this time, timeout occurs. It's waiting for the ACK for segment 3, it's waiting. It reaches the maximum time it's willing to wait. That is, some timeout event occurs and detects a packet loss. So if the timeout occurs, that is, after transmitting a packet, we start our timer. If we reach the maximum allowed value, without receiving the ACK, we assume that packet has been lost. As a result, loss has been detected. And we'll see shortly that when we detect loss, we decrease our window, our sending rate, because detection of loss is most often caused by congestion in the internet. And when congestion occurs, we should slow down our sending rate. And to slow down our sending rate, we decrease our congestion window. And there's specific ways at which we decrease it. So this is what we call a loss event. And the specific case is a loss event due to a timeout. But just to cover the other case, sometimes the timeout may be very long. So another thing that may happen is that before this timeout occurs, we actually receive some more ACKs. We'd received the ACK here, ACK 2001. Then we received another ACK with the same value. We call this a duplicate ACK because it's got the same value as this one. We receive this ACK. It would also say ACK equal 2001 because this destination is still waiting for byte 2001. Then it receives this one. This is the third duplicate ACK. In fact, four acknowledgements with the same number or three duplicate acknowledgements. This is an indicator to the source saying, okay, I know I've sent segment with sequence number 2001. I've now received four ACKs asking for segment 2001. That must mean that that segment didn't get through. It was lost. So this is another loss event where loss is detected. But in this case, loss is detected because of the third duplicate ACK was received. In the previous case, loss was detected because the timeout occurred. Depending on the length of the timeout, one of them will occur before the other. And both of them are implemented in TCP. We'll see later that depending on which type of event causes the loss or detects the loss, we will respond differently with the congestion window. So, to finish, what we do, if we detect a loss, we assume that's caused by congestion, therefore we slow down. And that the way that we slow down is we decrease the congestion window, and the multiplicative decrease phase involves the sender halving the congestion window for each packet loss. We'll see some finer details of that later. If we don't have packet loss, if we receive ACKs, the reception of ACKs indicates things are going okay. It means packets are not being lost. If we receive ACKs, then we increase our congestion window. And in the additive increase phase, we aim to increase it by one maximum segment size every round trip time. I think that's enough for today. We'll see next week the specific algorithms that can implement this increase and decrease, and then we'll go on to some of the more specifics of what happens when it's a duplicate ACK and what happens when it's a timeout event. Enough for today. As I said this morning, I don't think I'll finish marking the exams and the assignments until sometime next week, by Friday next week at the latest. Okay?